Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence.
Good morning, Valley Grove. It's great to be here with you this morning in our first ever virtual worship service. I know this is something that none of us thought we would be doing today, but here we are. And so we're going to make the best of it. We're going to worship the Lord because it says whether two or three are gathered in His name, there He is in the midst of them. And I just believe that we're still gathered together, even though we may not be in the same place. I was reminded last week as I was talking to a friend about how they were handling their church and what they were doing. And I told him, I said, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, none of this would have been possible except for just a very few churches. And so the fact that we can gather together, even though we're all in different locations, because God's gifted people with the ability to create new and amazing technology, we can still worship together. And so I'm thankful that we can have this time together with each other this morning. Hey, we're going to give everybody just a few minutes, a few seconds to get on before we begin the actual preaching part of this service. But before we do, I want to give you a couple of reminders or announcements for you to think about in the days ahead or to remember. Hey, first, don't forget that we're not having any Wednesday activities until April 15th. So that's no morning Bible study, jam for kids, youth ministry, or choir until April 15th. We've also canceled all extra activities until April 15th as well. So I know Jacob had a camping trip planned, and our Easter egg hunt was coming up. We've decided to cancel all those just to make sure that we're as safe as we can be, and we're just taking every precaution that we can. Also, we'll be worshiping again together next week virtually as well. Our staff is going to meet back together on March 31st to kind of decide where we're going to go from there. So it could be a few more weeks that we have to worship virtually. Maybe not. We're going to decide at that time, but definitely next week we'll be worshiping together virtually as well. Hey, if you know somebody who doesn't have access to Facebook or the internet or social media or even an email address, please make sure you take the initiative to make sure they know what's going on and they're in the loop as well. We don't want anybody to get left out. So take the initiative, contact them, and just make sure they know the latest information of what we're doing here at Valley Grove, because we still want to minister as we can, even in this coronavirus crisis. And lastly, and I don't want this to be awkward, I don't want this to be uncomfortable for anybody, but here's reality for where we're at as a church. We still have bills that we have to pay. I know it seems crazy, but that's just reality. Just like I personally have bills that still have to be paid even though we're in this crisis, and so do you, so does the church as well. And so we still have some things that are going to draft out of our account, and so we still need your support through your tithes and offerings. The cool part about it is we have just completed the process for online giving to be available to you. We were about to roll that out to the church at large, and so here we are. You can go to our website, which is valleygrovechurch.org, and there's a give button at the top, and you can click on that, and it will take you to a totally secure space on the website that will allow you to tithe. You can do it one time, you can do it set up where you do it every week, or you can set up as a recurring auto draft out of your account, just like you would some of your other bills that you normally would pay. So please head over there. We still need your support. We would love for you to partner with us in that way. So one more thing before we get started, Pastor Joe and Miss Reba have graciously provided us some of the amazing songs to worship with as well. Today, they're going to be down below. So if you want to click on those and worship to those as well as a part of your Sunday, normal Sunday routine, I would encourage you to do that. All right. Well, with no further ado, let's get started. And we're going to start our service today like we do every week, which is with our memory verse. So let's read it together. I'll give you just a second to find Psalm 119:11, whether it's on your phone or in a hard copy. All right, you ready? Here we go. Psalm 119:11. I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. Psalm 119:11. Hope you're memorizing these verses and reading them regularly, putting them in a place of prominence in your home so that you can think on them every time you see them. All right, so last Sunday when we were together in person, we started this new series called Jesus, the One and Only. And we kind of started into the series by looking at this very important question that I ran across several weeks ago. And the statement, or maybe the statement better than the question, the statement was, in Jesus, we have a coherent answer to life's greatest questions, which are origin, meaning, morality, and destiny. Robbie Zacharias is where those questions, where the statement came from. And you can go check out his videos on YouTube as well. I'm sure he does a much better job explaining them than I do. But last week, we looked at this idea of origins. And we noticed that all of us have a in our DNA almost, is something where we always want to know who we are and where we came from. We noticed last week that there's a spike in genealogy research because there's this intrinsic need in our life to find out who we are. Last week we saw that in Genesis, the Bible makes an incredible claim that we are created in the image of God, that all of humanity, our neighbors are created in the image of God, our kids are created in the image of God, and even our enemies are created in the image of God. All of us are created in the image of God. However, in Genesis chapter 3, something tragic happens, and that's when sin enters the world. And unfortunately, sin has marred the image of God in our lives, or the visual as it plays out in front of other people has marred that image. Yet, in his perfect timing, Jesus came, and Jesus did everything he could to restore not only the image of God in our lives, but that portrayal of the image of God into the world. And so Jesus, even going to the point of dying on the cross, revives that image of God in our life so that we can then live that out in front of other people. He interacts with people. He serves people. He forgives people. He desires to be in relationship with people, even to the point of dying on the cross, so that he, Jesus, can make a way for us to be in relationship with him. And so Jesus corroborates the claim in Genesis that we are made in God's image through his actions, through his words, through his deeds, and ultimately through dying on the cross. And so we found out last week that we are created in the image of God. But that's only one question. We've got three more to go. And so today we want to tackle the question of meaning. I don't know about you, but at some point in my life, or at multiple points in my life, depending on the time of the season, I've asked a question like this: why am I here? Or what purpose am I serving? Or what meaning do I have in my life? I'm sure you've asked a question like that as well. And so today we want to look at what Jesus says about our meaning or our purpose in life. In order to do that, we're going to look at several passages from the Gospels. We're going to look at one from Matthew, two from Luke, and one from John. So we're going to start in Matthew 22:34-40. So Matthew 22:34-30. And so let's read that together. But when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, so that's two religious groups in Israel at the time of Jesus. So when the Pharisees heard that he, that's Jesus, had silenced the Sadducees, they gathered together. They like formed a huddle. And one of them, a lawyer, asked Jesus a question to test him. So here's the scenario. The Sadducees have tried to trap Jesus and show him to be a phony and a fake, but they failed. And so now the other party, the other religious group, is going to step in because, you know, since they failed, they're going to try to do it now. And so the Pharisees, one of the Pharisees comes up and asks Jesus a question. There's a big crowd around. And here's the question, verse 36. Teacher, which is the great commandment in the law? I'm going to pause there for a minute because you have to realize, in Jewish culture, there were 600 plus laws in the Old Testament. 600. And he asked Jesus, which is the greatest one? Think about that. Because Jesus could have chosen any of those 600 he wanted to. But listen to what Jesus says. And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And a second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Listen to verse 40. This is going to be key later. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. All right, so again, Jesus could have chosen from 600 plus commandments, but he chooses not one, but two, and says these two are the top. They're at the tip of the spear, and you got to get these right. These are the two greatest commandments. So if Jesus says these are the two greatest things we can do in life, and these are that everything else is built around these, it's probably important that we know what he means by love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all of your soul, and all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself. So let's look at those for just a moment this morning. All right, let's look at love, the first name. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind. Heart, soul, and mind. Your translation may also add, and strength. It means the same thing. When Jesus throws these three, there are four things together. So it's love God, and then he throws three descriptors with all your heart, soul, and mind. What he's trying to do is to elicit the idea that we should love God with our physicality, with our physicalness, like what we can do physically, tangibly, maybe a better word to describe it, what with our mental capacities, with our psychological abilities, and with our innermost being. So in essence, he's saying that we should love God with everything we have, every fiber of our being. So when we read, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, if your translation adds that, we need to understand that to mean we need to love God with every fiber of our being, all of our desires, all of our passions, all of our wants, all of our thoughts, all of our actions. Everything should be dedicated to the Lord, to serving him, to loving him, and to being on his page, not our page. The cool thing is, Jesus shows us exactly what this looks like. And he does that on a number of occasions. But there's one occasion that absolutely stands out to me above all the other ones. And it's the last night that Jesus is with his disciples. In fact, it's in the last few moments that Jesus is with his disciples before Judas comes to betray him and he's arrested by the Jewish guard, so to speak, by the Jewish temple guard. And so the story occurs in Luke 22, verses 41 through 42. And Jesus, withdrew from them from about a stone's throw. That's from some of his disciples. Now, here's the scenario. Jesus has taken his disciples to a favorite spot in the Garden of Gethsemane, which is this olive grove that's right across a small valley from the temple, basically. And so you can see the temple. And so Jesus and his disciples are in this spot. And he says, he's asking them all to pray because Jesus knows this is the last night. Like things are coming to a head. They're a culmination of his ministry. The cross is imminent. And so he says, hey, I need you to pray. Well, they all fall asleep. And Jesus goes a stone's throw away. And listen to what he prays. Listen to what Luke says. And he knelt down and prayed. And listen to his words. Listen. Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Wow. Think about that. All the disciples are asleep. Judas hasn't made it there yet with the Jewish temple guard. Jesus could have slipped away and nobody would have ever known. Jesus could have ran away and nobody would have heard him because they were all asleep. Jesus could have gotten out of there like that. When Judas does show up and Peter pulls out a sword and cuts a dude's ear off, Jesus responds to Peter and says, hey, put that up. Don't you know that I could have called 12 legions of angels down from heaven? And they could have taken care of all this. But Jesus doesn't run, and he doesn't fight back. He does exactly what he's praying here. Listen to his words again. He says, "Father, if you're willing, remove this cup from me." In other words, Lord, if there's any other way that redemption for humanity can be solved, let's do that. But in the next breath, he says, "Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." In other words, using all of his mental faculties and emotions and knowledge and tangible assets, says, "I know there can't be another way. Like, I have to do this. And so, you know what, Lord? I'll do it. I'll do your will because I love you and I love people." Man, what an amazing passage. What an amazing moment in the life of Jesus. Because in that moment, he shows exactly what it means to love God with every fiber of your being. Jesus could have cut and run. He could have fallen back. And he would have won either way. But he really wouldn't have won. Because he wouldn't have done what God had sent him to earth to do. What he came to earth to do. To die on the cross. To provide salvation and redemption and forgiveness for everybody. But yet Jesus wanted to complete his mission. Because he loved God. And as we'll see, he loved people as well. So what does it mean to love God with our heart, soul, and mind? It means to love God unconditionally. Sacrificially, even. With every fiber of our being. So now, that's the first part. Let's talk about the second part. Jesus says, the second commandment is like it. Meaning, it's on equal status with the first. That means they're together. And he says, the second commandment is love your neighbor as yourself. Now, the interesting thing is in Matthew's telling of this story, or in the setting where these two ideas come up, after Jesus says his statement, the story's over. However, in Luke tells this story in a different context. It comes up at a different point in Jesus' ministry. The ending of Luke's gospel of this story is a little different. That adds some clarity on what it means for us to love our neighbor as ourselves. And so that's in Luke chapter 10. And in Luke chapter 10, what we find is a lawyer, a person who is knowledgeable in the law of the Old Testament, a scholar of the Old Testament, comes up, and he wants to justify himself, meaning he wants to make himself look good. And make it out like he's doing the right thing already. And so that's where we pick up the story. But the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, and this is in Luke 10, 29 through 37. All right, but he, the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Here's what Jesus says. "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho." So Jesus is going to tell a story to answer his question. "And he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead." All right, so you got the picture. One Jewish man is walking down a road from Jerusalem to Jericho, which was known to be a treacherous road. And robbers attack him. They take everything and they almost kill him. He's half dead, meaning he's just barely hanging on. "Now, by chance, a priest was going down on that same road. When he saw him, he passed to the other side," or on the other side, meaning here's the dead guy's right here, and the priest is walking down the road, and he goes, whoop, and goes around him. Not what you think would happen. "So likewise, a Levite," that's another person who helped in the temple, "he's walking down the same exact road. And here's the dead guy, he's up here laying half dead, and the Levite's coming down the road, and he goes, whoop, and goes around him. Doesn't do anything for the guy." Then Jesus says in verse 33, "But a Samaritan, as he journeyed, came to where he was," meaning he was journeying down that same road, came to where the half-dead man was, "and when he saw him, he had compassion. He went up to him, bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own animal and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day, he took out 2 denarii, that's 2 days' worth of wages, and gave it to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him. And whatever you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" All right, so let's stop there. So Jesus has said, there's a guy in the middle of the road, two Israelite people who should have helped the dude, who should have been his neighbor, were not his neighbor because they didn't do anything for him. But then a Samaritan. You got to remember, Samaritans were hated by the Israelites. And the Israelites hated the Samaritans. The Samaritans hated there's an unhealthy relationship, right? And so the Samaritan is coming down the road. He sees the guy, stops, bandages up his wounds, then gets off his animal, puts the half-dead man on the animal, walks the rest of the way until they find an inn, a place where this man can be nurtured back to health. Stays there, gives the person who owns the inn two full days' worth of wages, and says, use this to take care of him, and spend whatever else you need to make sure this man gets back to health. And when I come back, whatever you spend on him, I'll pay you back. He basically gives the innkeeper a blank check. He doesn't know, the Samaritan doesn't know how long the man's going to stay there. But he says, says the innkeeper, you do whatever it takes to make sure he gets back to health. And then Jesus poses the question to the lawyer who was trying to justify himself. As we read, he says, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers? And I can just hear it, I can just feel it. The lawyer, probably in a low, quiet voice, said, the one who showed him mercy. He didn't want to have to say that. He thought his neighbor was the people who were just like him, who were of his social status, who were of his educational background, who were of his socioeconomic class. But yet the story makes it evidently clear that a neighbor is not someone who's just like you, but is a person who's in need. And Jesus ends the story by telling the guy, you are correct, now go and do likewise. Meaning, go and help the person who needs help, regardless of whether they are like you, similar to you, of the same class, economic group, educational group, whatever it is. None of that matters. Because being a neighbor is being a neighbor, is loving people who need help, regardless of where they are, who they are. So when Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself, he's meaning love anyone who needs help. I'm going to stop here because I know what some of you are thinking. You're like, well, Pastor, it said love your neighbor as yourself. And what about those moments when I don't love myself and I'm not in a good spot? Well, that's a fair question. But I want you to hold on a minute because Jesus is going to speak to that as well. He just does it in John chapter 13. In John chapter 13, verse 34 and 35, which occurred just a little bit ahead of the Gethsemane passage we read out of Luke 22. And in John 13, 34 and 35, Jesus is with his disciples. And listen to what he says, because it's rather mind-blowing. He says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Now, at this point, they're probably thinking, like we're thinking, okay, Jesus, we've already heard that. Remember, we were with you when you told the story of the two greatest commandments, love your neighbor as a. We got it. Love our neighbor as a. Jesus doesn't stop the sentence there. Listen to what he says. A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. Just as I have loved you, you are also to love one another. By this, all people will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. Jesus just amped up the game considerably. Because what Jesus just did there is, he said, your love for others is not dependent on you. It's dependent on me and how I have loved you. How did Jesus love people? Sacrificially, unconditionally, with every fiber of his being, even being willing to die on the cross for them. Wow. That's a lot more than just love your neighbor as yourself, didn't it? But here Jesus clarifies exactly what he means by love your neighbor as yourself. So let's put that definition in now, adding this John 13, 34 idea. When Jesus tells us that we should love our neighbor as ourselves, he's meaning we should love people with every fiber of our being, just like he loved us. sacrificially, unconditionally, even to the point of sacrificing our own lives for the sake of someone else. Let's put these two ideas together. So when Jesus says love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, he means love God with every fiber of your being, just like I did. And when he says love your neighbor as yourself, he's meaning love people with every fiber of our being, just like I loved you with every fiber of my being, unconditionally, sacrificially, even at the point of giving up your own life for someone else. And Jesus says those two ideas are the two greatest ideas, commandments, or thoughts in the entire Old Testament, in the entire world, in the entire Bible. Those two. So how do those work with our question of meaning and purpose? Like how does this relate to meaning and purpose? Well, remember I told you that last little line that in Jesus' statement in Matthew would be important. And here's where it's important. Because that last little line in Matthew 22:40, here's what Jesus says. On these two commandments depend all the law and the prophets. What Jesus means is loving God, which equals loving God with every fiber of our being, just like Jesus did, and loving others with every fiber of our being, just like Jesus has loved us, are the foundational stones for everything else in life. Because remember, God gives these ideas and commandments and rules and all of this, not to cage us in, but to give us a format and a basis for life and for faith and for serving him. And Jesus says these two ideas are at the most foundational level, which means that if we get these right, we're well on our way to getting the rest right. However, if we get these wrong and we're not loving God and we're not loving people, then everything else is not correct in our life. So I don't think it's a far jump for us to say that we find meaning in life and we find our purpose in life when we are loving God with every fiber of our being, just like Jesus did, and we are loving people with every fiber of our being, just like Jesus loved us. I think when we get those two things right, that is when we feel fulfilled and can have meaning and purpose in our life. You take that away, and that's when we fall into despair, into the pit of agony, and all of the bad parts of life. I don't know about you, friends, but I know for me personally, the moments in my life where I've lost sight of loving God and loving people have been some of the darkest in my life. But the moments, on the other hand, where I have been totally focused on loving God as Jesus did and loving people as Jesus did have been some of the greatest moments of my life. Because listen to me, it is in our DNA to love God and love people as Jesus did. We were built to do this. And whenever we don't, that's when we feel unfulfilled emotionally, physically, mentally, because we're not doing what we were created to do. So now how does that look in our everyday life? Being truthful, it's going to look different for all of us. Because all of us are vocationally called to different things. So how do I love God and love people as Jesus loved God and as Jesus loved me in my vocational life? Well, that's going to look a little bit different for all of us. Because God has called all of us to do different things. I don't buy into this sacred versus secular callings for vocation. I think that's a bunch of baloney. Because God has uniquely placed you and me in our spheres of influence because that's what he's created us to be good at. That's what talents he's given us. We're not all robots. We're not all exactly the same. He's uniquely gifted us to do different things. And so vocationally, some of us are in one sector of life and some of us are in another sector of life. And that's okay. And God has sacredly appointed us to be in that place for this season, for this moment, to impact the people that are there around us. And so vocationally, I think this could play out in a myriad of ways. Let me give you one example that I saw just yesterday on Facebook. in the midst of all of this coronavirus, COVID-19 crisis, one of my former students in our youth ministry up in Athens posted what I thought was a great example of loving God and loving people and using the talents that she's been given to help. She posted a very simple message that said something to the effect, I'm going to paraphrase it. Hey, if any of you parents who are now homeschooling your kids because they're out of school, if any of you need any help with math, send me a message. Let me know. I'll do whatever I can to help your kid. I was a homeschool kid once, and so I know what it's like. And sometimes it's hard to figure out things early on. I mean, what a great message to people. Now, will anybody take her up on that? I don't know, but that's not the point. The point is she was using the talents, abilities, gifts, and skills that God has given her to help people, to love people in the midst of this crisis. What a great, great use of what God's given her to love God as Jesus did and to love others as Jesus has loved her. What a great example. Man, I've seen this in other areas of life. I've seen it in doctors handling the last ending moments of a person's life with such care that I've been moved and encouraged to be better at handling difficult moments in life. I've seen it through teachers loving on kids, not because the kid deserved it, but because the kid needed it. Helping them out, not because they deserved extra help, but because they needed extra help. Man, I saw it in my granddad's life when he was older and couldn't do certain things and he wasn't really called to be a Sunday school teacher or he was kind of past the point of being able to work in youth ministry or anything like that. But my granddad was really gifted at gardening. And so every summer he would take a bag of vegetables up to the church for the staff and say, hey, I just want to be a blessing to you. That was what he was good at. That's what he could do. And so, sure, were those vegetables going to change anybody's life? Maybe not. But man, he was still loving people the way Jesus had loved him. So there's a variety of ways that vocationally this can play out in our lives. And so our job is to figure out how we can love God as Jesus loved him. And how we can love people as Jesus has loved us in the midst of our vocation. And it's also going to play out differently in our everyday life because we're in different spheres of influence and we have different sets of friends and different sets of friends are going to need different things. And so sometimes it may be as simple as praying for somebody. Hey, whenever you go back to like normal life and you go out to eat, I know I've mentioned this before, hey, pray for your waiter or waitress. I'm sure they're going to need it because a lot of them are not working right now. Also, be generous and leave them a good tip because, hey, listen, reality is none of us are going out to eat right now, so we can save up some money and give them a very gracious tip. It could be as simple as listening to someone who's struggling with addiction or crying with someone who's really struggling and going through just a difficult time in life. I mean, there are 1,001 ways that we can love God and love people in the midst of life. And so I just want to encourage you to do that. In everyday life, there's going to be ways where you can love on somebody as Jesus has loved you. And so you need to open your eyes and be cognizant of what's going on in your life. So let's wrap this all up, friend. In this way, we find our purpose and meaning in life when we are loving God as Jesus loved God, and when we are loving people with every fiber of our being as Jesus has loved us. When we don't do those two things is when we're going to struggle to find meaning and purpose in our life. And if we can get, if we can get these two things right, we will be well on our way to impacting our area of influence for the gospel of Jesus Christ and the kingdom of God, because we will be showing them what we were created to do, to love God with every fiber of our being and to love people with every fiber of our being, right? So let me challenge you to do two things this week. We always like to end with a challenge because we want to go out. We want to be active. And we want to not just intellectually take in what we've learned, but we want to apply it to our lives. So I'm going to give you two challenges this week. They're going to center around our 2 points. And they're going to be in the form of a couple questions. So around the idea of loving God, here's two thoughts. What does loving God look like in your life today? What does it look like? Just be honest with yourself. What does it look like? Is it where it needs to be? Is it not? It's okay. Just admit and be honest. Secondly, do you love God like Jesus does? Man, let's be honest. We all really need help there. So let's move forward this week. Let's take this time to move forward to love God like Jesus did. And secondly, around loving people, are we really loving people like Jesus did? That's a big question. I'm sure you, just like I, need help in that area as well. So let's take these moments that we've got. Life's slowed down a little bit. So let's be a little introspective. And let's try to move forward closer to Jesus this week so that we can love God and love people like He did. Right? So those are your two challenges. I know you need help. I need help. We all need help. That's okay. Let's just take time to move forward. Well, that's kind of the end of our message today. So let's pray. And we'll close our service for today. Lord, thank you so much for this day. Lord, I thank you that we can worship together virtually. Lord, that you allow us to still worship together, even though we're not in the same room, even though we're not together. Lord, we do look forward for the day that we're back together in one place worshiping together. But for now, Lord, I pray that you would bless these moments that we have together online. Lord, that you would use them to move and to touch our hearts, to touch our lives, Lord, so that we can continue to grow closer to you. And Lord, I pray that we would love you like Jesus loved you, and that we would love people with every fiber of our being, like Jesus has loved us with every fiber of our being. Lord, go with us. May we move closer to you this week. In the name of God. Amen.
Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.